to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast with me, Timothy John, and our special guest, Frankie Hall of Das Hutchinson Brother UK, who joins us just 2 days after finishing 10th in the elite women's road race at the National Championships in Saltburn. Frankie, thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on. It's good to be here.
Wow, an amazing performance. We're very lucky to have you with us. I think you were the only rider from a domestic team to crack a top 10, which featured former world champions, Olympic champions, reigning British champions. Not bad company. Has it sunk in yet?
Yeah. When you say it like that, it sounds quite cool. Yeah, it has sunk in. Kind of came back from nationals and not. I'm racing domestically this week, but I've got a big target next week. So kind of not too long to just dwell on it. Got to get the last bits of work in this week before going off to Portugal next week. But it has sunk in and I am really happy. I'm really pleased. I am really happy.
And how about on the physical side? I mean, it was a pretty attritional race and you were at the sharp end of it, constantly having to react to moves from within the group. How are you feeling physically?
Yeah, physically fine. I've had a big block of training where I've kind of been going out and doing three to four days on the trot of hard riding. So it was kind of just like another, I mean, technically on paper, it's the same as a hard training day. So physically, not too bad. Had a nice cafe day yesterday, back to training today and racing tomorrow. But don't feel too bad, thankfully.
Tomorrow, I think you're up to Ilkley.
So we've got, can't remember which, Otley tomorrow, I think, and Ilkley on Friday. So the two kind of Yorkshire-based town centre crits to kick off the crit series, which is, will be great fun. I really enjoy them.
That performance at the weekend, I mean, absolutely sensational. But would you call it your best performance to date?
In terms of results and on the road, it's definitely the best result that I've got. For sure, definitely in road racing.
It was a race that had sort of many fluctuations as it reached its climax. The early break went, of course, Sean, your teammate, was in that. Lizzie Brooke, I think, was the last person standing from that break. And then Anna Henderson dropped the hammer on the final lap and suddenly, you know, the race was on. Tell us how you got involved in that break. You must have been pretty vigilant.
So I've always been someone that races kind of with my legs and not necessarily with my head, which is purely just down to my inexperience of, like, I joined DAS in August last year, but prior to that, I'd never raced in a kind of high level elite team. I just not had that experience. I'd not had the knowledge base. I'd not really learned how to do it. And physically, I'd never been in a position to even think about doing it. But I went into this race with quite a strict plan with myself. And that was purely to be patient and be smart. I kind of had to trust, although it, as tempting as it was, especially for me, how I ride, as tempting as it was to just kind of get in one of those early moves, spend a couple of hours off the front, get your name noticed, get kind of the team kit out there, I had to back myself with where I knew I was physically, and trust in the training that I've been doing. And I kind of just had to see and trust myself that when it gets really hard and the top riders want to make it hard, then you can be there as well. And I've been watching a lot of the pro racing. I'm learning more and more about it. I kind of done a bit of research and learning through watching racing as well as racing it. I knew that all these moves are going to go early, but there were probably 15, 20 people there that came into this race thinking, I want that jersey. And I'd earmarked a couple of riders and I just said to myself, if they're not going, you're not going. You've just got to trust. I had to gamble. And if they make a mistake, then you've gambled and you've not come out on top. But the likelihood is that you will end up in the right place at the right time with that logic, and then trust my legs to go with it. I knew that the back hour, 2 hours were going to be hard. These early moves went and there was no reaction in the peloton. It was like kind of like a, not a cafe ride, but it was very chilled for the first 2 hours. Kind of maybe third lap or halfway through, there was a bit of a split. Maybe 20 or 30 of us got like formed a kind of chase group behind the break that was, again, that select group of pretty much all the World Tour riders plus myself, Tammy and Ruth from my team. But it actually, there was no cohesion there. And we still had Sean off the front. So even though there were three of us there, there was no responsibility on us to do any work to keep that group away. And so it all came back together. And then, yeah, I knew as the gap, DSM were started to really, and this is what I thought would happen. As soon as they wanted to close the gap, they have, like, these World Tour girls have the power to do it. And for sure, as soon as it came to the back end of the race and the gap needed to get closed, they rode, and I think it was Becky rode an absolute stormer to shut that gap. I mean, I never went anywhere near the front, but almost what it looked like almost single-handedly, had a great ride. And I knew that it was then just going to be really hard. But I'd like worked out my nutrition. I'd fueled accordingly. I'd kept hydrated. Thankfully, I'd been over in France, so the heat wasn't a factor for me. But I just prepared myself to not do anything stupid and stay vigilant, stay smart, stay near the front, but don't like go off the front, and just get ready to fight when you need to fight.
You mentioned there Ruth and Tammy and Sean off the front. I mean, there's a lot of strength and depth in this Das Hutchinson Brother UK team. And yet, as you say, when Becky Story decided to up the pace, she upped the pace, you know, and then of course they had Josie Nelson to take things up, you know, right at the denouement. How would you gauge the gap there, Frankie, between the top domestic teams and the World Tour teams? I mean, you're the living proof that, you know, that gap can be crossed, that you are able to compete with professional riders. But how would you assess the gap in quality and strength?
I think it's it's completely individual, and it's down, like, it's different for different riders. For me, I'm quite happy to say, or quite confident to say, I know where I'm at physically. I know what I'm capable of physically, both from training with various different people, the work I've done with my coach, and the athletes that I've ridden with, how I felt in the UCI races that I've done, the numbers, the data that I get from these races, speaking to other coaches, other DSs and other teams, staff and other teams, I know where I'm at physically. So for me, the difference between, obviously there is potentially a physical difference, but the main difference for me is my experience in these races and the know-how and the tact to race, which I'm only going to develop by racing more and like seeking out more opportunities and racing, being in this position in a race. So for me, that's the biggest difference. I got, once I was in that move, I was then completely overwhelmed by the company I was in. Not overwhelmed by the presence of, it was more the fact that I was like, oh God, I don't want to get in the way here. Like, I don't want to do something stupid and ruin it for someone else. And that shouldn't be the mindset that I have. Like, we've all got the same numbers on our back. Like, whether you've got world champs bands around your arms, previous national champs, you're in the same race, you're on the same start line. And this is something that's lived rent-free in my house, in my head, is I was really pissed off with myself for having that attitude and not just racing it like it was any other race. But again, I've not been in that position. I would have been disappointed if I hadn't have made that break, purely from where I'm at physically. But I was fully expecting to get outraced at any given point, like outsmarted. But physically, I knew, especially where the attacks came, were uphill, and I'm at quite a benefit going uphill. So I knew that I could stay with anything. If anything went up a climb, especially if it was longer than, Saltburn's a bit short, I'd still call it a sprint. It's under a minute getting up there. But most of the deciding moves went kind of up Forge Lane climb, which is the climb after the big, there's a big wide descent into a roundabout, and then you go up kind of a 2-3-4 minute drag before you come down the fast descent into Saltburn. And that's where most of the damage was done. I think it was on the penultimate lap that Anna first attacked up there, and I came into it quite far back. I came into it maybe 30 wheels back, and I saw her go. And I've actually watched it back because I saw her go and I was like, oh God, Frankie, that's where you've got to be. And you've kind of got, you, it's now or never. If you don't go now, you're never getting on it. So I had to close a gap, kind of people coming out that out the back of that. And I just knew I just had to go straight through and get onto it. And I've rewatched the video and I can see how far I, how poorly I was positioned coming into it and probably burnt a few too matches there. But I had that kind of, I had that backing. I knew I could get to it before we went down again. And I knew over the top of Saltburn, again, I was positioned poorly. I was really struggling getting down that descent. I don't know why. I'm quite confident descending, but I think I just couldn't get on the wheels, and then weight doesn't work in my favor downhill. I would have liked to have had a bit of a bigger gear as well to get to, I was spinning out as soon as a gap went. So then, yeah, I came into the bottom of Saltburn far back, so that when Lizzie attacked, and maybe Flora, a couple of people were trying to attack through the finish, just after the finish. So I knew it was going to be kind of a bit of a longer chase than it had been previous laps. I'd got on way before the top of Saltburn, but I knew this was going to be a bit longer. And I came over and got onto Sophie's wheel, and then we were kind of dangling off the back of it for a while. But I knew with the way the wind was, and the feed zone, that basically how the course was then for the next 10K, it was more beneficial to really empty yourself to try and get on the back of it then.
That seemed like the pivotal moment, Frankie. As a spectator, you were riding with Sophie Wright of Fenix de Koninck, and then Claire Steeles, she was recovering from the mechanical, and suddenly the three of you had formed an effective unit, an effective fighting force, and it wasn't long at all before you were back with the leaders. I mean, you said it a few moments ago that, you know, you had a series of names that you'd noted before the race, and when they moved, you had to move. Who was that precisely? Who are we talking about here? I mean, my goodness, a few to choose from. Lizzie Deignan, arguably one of the greatest riders in the history of the sport. Fifer Georgie, the defending champion. Anna Henderson, who'd won the time trial title a few days earlier. Who was on your watch list?
I mean, to be honest, all of them. If you're wearing a World Tour jersey, you've got the. I've watched all of those girls race. I've raced with some of them before, but I've watched them all race, and I admire how they all race, and they're all incredible riders. But I did just pick three, and I just thought, well, Pfeiffer's obviously won it. She's double national champion already on the road. She's had an absolutely incredible season so far in all the World Tour races, and she's won this race before. And she's very good, like very, very strong finisher. And it was quite, not obvious, but watching how they were riding in the race, I could kind of tell that it was going to be Pfeiffer that they were kind of protecting for the finish. And then Anna had another stellar ride at the TT. She's had an injury-plagued early start to the season, but she's always been someone that I've watched and admired how she races. And she's obviously on very good form, and I just thought she knows how to race. She's here as an individual rider as well, which means that she's probably racing a lot smarter than necessarily if there's four or five of them, or she's got a team around her. So she'd probably make quite sensible decisions as to when to follow moves or not, whether she was based on wanting to be there at the end. And then Elle Barker, just very experienced, savvy rider as well. Obviously the under 23 girls that were with us as well, incredibly, everyone, you could have picked from a whole heap of riders, but I just saw three jerseys that are very, if I'm kind of seeing stars, they're three very distinctive jerseys that I don't have to really, it's very, wheels that are very easy to spot. And I just had to pick and just say, right, you've got a plan, you've got to stick to it, and trust in your plan, which was hard, especially at the start when I was seeing these girls go off. I was like, oh no, Frankie, you can't. You just chill out, especially... especially when you feel good. But just had to trust the process.
Yeah, it was a very similar course to last year. Not quite identical, but not far off. How valuable was it to know the course? How similar was it, for example, to the East Cleveland Classic, which you rode in April?
Yeah, so it was a very similar course to East Cleveland, slightly easier in terms of attrition and much easier than the course last year. The course last year in my current form would suit me a lot better because it's got a lot more elevation. But last year I wasn't where I am physically now, and I wasn't as I hadn't done as I was a much more novice rider. Last year I was going well, but I got very overexcited. I'm like a golden retriever or spaniel. You just kind of go with everything. You get excited by the fact that you can ride at the front of the race. You burn way too many matches in the wrong place. And ultimately, when it went with an hour to go, I didn't have the legs to go with it. And that's I just didn't have the legs to follow these moves when it mattered. And I was absolutely in the right place last year to go with it. I just didn't have the physical ability to go with it. So, yeah, if it had been last year's course this year, it would have been more enjoyable for me, I think. But it was raced hard. It was definitely a benefit knowing the course. But again, you do 5 laps. So by the time you come round to where the race starts, you know where you're going.
What difference does the Nationals make that it's a Nationals day rather than a round of the National Road Series? Much bigger crowds, I guess. Obviously a higher quality field. Does it feel like more of an occasion? And does that have a physical impact?
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a lot more. Although, to be fair, Klondike was very well supported. I think it's a massive cycling region up there. And Saltburn was lined with people, even for our race in the morning at the National Series. And I have to say, like British cycling, that there isn't, in terms of infrastructure and how the races are run, they do the National Series really well. There really wasn't much different in terms of a National Series. It felt like a National Series race. You're just in a much more esteemed company. And the benefit for me in terms of the riding is that national championships, you have a lot stronger riders riding, and the race is made hard without you having to make it hard. Whereas the national series, for me, I want the race to be hard, because especially for our team, we have such strength and depth, and we can have 6, 7, 8 riders at the front end of a national series race at the end when it's really hard, but we then burn a lot of matches making it hard so other people get a free ride. Whereas on Sunday, I didn't really have to do anything for it to be hard. So I then got more kind of, I've saved a lot of myself to then be there when it's racing and kind of have the autonomy to be fully, fully riding for myself and protect myself and only really, like, openly, you have your own result on your mind. And that, I just rode with that. It's probably the first time that I've purely ridden with the intention of, you want a result here, so you're going to ride to get yourself a result.
How did you start in this sport, Frankie? I think hockey was your first sporting love.
Yeah, so I grew up playing hockey. My dream was to go to the Olympics playing hockey. And I was playing at a high level. I was loving it. Everything was going seemingly well. I actually got an eating disorder when I was 16, 17. And that just threw me out of the sport. I got really ill. Couldn't do any sport for maybe 2 or 3 years. And tried to come back to it. Came to uni. Tried to get back into the sport. Was playing for the Loughborough. Playing for a high level team in Loughborough. Playing for some club teams. Playing league teams. But I just had fallen out of love with it. I'd started to do some like running, cycling. As I was recovering from my eating disorder, I had very low bone density, so I had to be a bit careful with what sport I did. So swimming and cycling were the two that were recommended just because they're lower impact. And then I got friendly with a triathlon club and kind of just got involved through that at uni. The social side of it was what got me in at first. Made some great friends and then just really fully got involved with the cycling club at university and just kind of went from there, really. My first race was a campus crit around, literally around the campus. I think I got dropped about 5 minutes in, but I really enjoyed it and just carried on from there.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, I think when we were talking earlier, it became apparent that I'd put 2 and 2 together and made 5, and assuming that you wanted to study at Loughborough because it has this incredible reputation as a sporting university, but you were there to study something quite different, I think.
Yeah, so I came and studied a maths degree, and I was there just to go to the uni. It's the only uni I ever wanted to go to, only uni I applied to. I did go for the hockey. I'd been on England camps and national camps here, training weekends. and the sporting facilities did attract me, but I didn't, at the time when I applied and came here, I didn't know cycling was a sport. It was kind of a method of transport. So it wasn't what drew me in.
And although you studied maths as an undergraduate, I think you've gone on to study at a higher level with more of a focus on sport and physiology.
Yeah. So I did my undergrad in maths. It was actually a joint honours. So I did maths and sports science. My master's, I went on to do, it was actually called exercises medicine, which is using physical activity in general health. Essentially, how can you use physical activity and lack of inactivity in general health? How can we save the NHS money by people being more active and using less medicine is essentially what that was. Probably with quite a big focus on COVID, just because of the time that I did my master's. And then I started to do a PhD role, which was more sports based. It was performance, like sports performance physiology, looking at blood flow restriction training. So quite a niche, high level, like specific element of physiology. So yeah, I was still pursuing quite an academic route until this season.
Again, something we were discussing off air and a recurring theme actually of the Brother UK Cycling podcast, because of our investments in the sport. We sponsor two development teams, effectively Des Hutchins and Brother UK and Brother UK on Form. And we're constantly amazed and impressed by A, how hard the riders work simply to compete at an elite level. And secondly, by how diverse and often inspiring their time is off the bike. And I think you're kind of living that double-edged sword, haven't you? You've recently had to at least postpone PhD studies so you can focus on being the best cyclist you can be.
Yeah, I've been, so throughout the last 3 or 4 years since COVID, I've been juggling university, working, training and racing. So you kind of have like 3 and then 4 if you want to chuck in some sort of personal and social life. Juggling everything like that, which you can't, you kind of have to study because that's what you're committing to do for a longer term career. University is probably the most expensive thing that's ever going to happen to you. So you have to work to fund uni and living like that. And then cycling is not a cheap sport. So you have to work to fund going to races, petrol, transport, everything that your bike might need, training. Yeah. And then just life expenses. Started my PhD, which was essentially a job. It's a funded PhD role. So I'd actually stopped working for other reasons in October 2022. Had some time away from everything, time away from sport, cycling, to focus on some, deal with some personal things, and then came back to do my PhD, which was work. And Loughborough University were great. I was kind of on a sports scholarship program, so I supported financially and in the sport, which did allow me to progress, kind of gave me this massive stepping stone to where I am now. The cycling performance program that they had there gave me the opportunity and the race, like domestically, the race exposure to step up to the team with DAS. And yeah, so I've been doing that. And then now took a step back from the PhD just because mentally I was not in the right place to be able to focus to do it. And some things I'd learned over the last year is that life is really short. So if you want to do something, then go ahead and do it. And you've got to live your life for you, not for kind of other people's trajectories for what they think you should be doing in life. And I knew physically, I've got some weird physiology where I just seem to be able to train and train and train. And the more I train, the better I get. And a lot of people that I've spoken to have been like, oh, you're too old. You're not going to go any further. You're too old. And I'm like, well, I'm still progressing year on year physically. And then the more racing I'm doing, the more I'm going to learn. And I still believe that I have a lot of development within myself. And so until I feel satisfied with my development, or I'm satisfied that, oh, you know what, I've given this everything and I'm not going to make it, I'm not going to go any further, I want to keep doing it. I really enjoy it. I love it. I love racing my bike. I love the experiences that you have. And until I get to the level where I can call it like a full-time job, I'm willing to make the sacrifices and work around and do whatever I need to do in order to make it work. And you have to miss some things. You miss a lot of life like outside of cycling. But I'm going to have to miss some races for work commitments, but I have the priority races and races that I can get confirmed in advance from the team. And then I just work around that to do the best I can. And that's all that anyone can really, at this level, maybe some of the younger athletes, if they're living at home, they don't necessarily have some of the more like day-to-day life expenses that you have when you're an adult. But I just have to make it work, and I'll continue to do so until I'm satisfied that I've gone as far as I can. But I don't feel like I'm there yet, and I'm still loving it, and I still want to keep progressing. So it's what I'm going to do.
Super impressive. I mean, it's become a bit of a recurring theme on the podcast, and I'm, you know, constantly amazed by just how hard riders work at this level to compete against world tour professionals. At least once a year, you'll be doing a number of UCI races overseas, Volta Portugal Feminina coming up. It's impressive. You mentioned some teams had told you that, you know, you're too old, which seems extraordinary for a sport in which Marianne Vos is still one of the strongest riders in the world. Lizzie Deignan, you raced against at the weekend. Is that a sort of inspiration that you can find so many riders at the very highest level who are in their mid to late 30s?
Yeah, and I think it's becoming more and more so. I don't know whether it's like, I think for me, especially as I didn't start riding until I was 22. So I've got like, I didn't have that time as an under 23. If I was this age and I'd been racing since I was 16, then maybe, but I don't feel like that. And yeah, another one who again was on another brother team was Claire Steeles, who's actually had quite a similar pathway into it. She came from hockey and then went to duathlon. And you kind of know within yourself, when, especially I've been in sport my whole life, you know, you can tell where you're at. And yeah, it does show that it is possible if you're good enough. And it might come down to the fact that actually you're not good enough, and that's fine. But I don't want to just think, oh, what if I just tried a bit more? Or what if I'd explored this? Or what if I'd just given it a full shot? Yeah, I just don't want to have any, I'd rather regret like not making it than not trying.
Well, that's a really succinct way of putting it. You mentioned, you know, cycling is not a cheap sport, and goodness knows it isn't. Anybody who's even remotely close to cycling knows how expensive it can be. Although Das Hutchinson Brother UK is not a team able to pay salaries, it does provide equipment, it does provide entry to races, accommodation at races. This is where Brother UK sponsorship ultimately is channeled. It's a financial sponsorship, it's not value in kind. How valuable is that to you as a rider?
Oh yeah, it's beyond, like, ultimately I wouldn't be doing what I was doing if I wasn't on the team. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't be racing. It's as long and short as that. It means that we get, yeah, I just wouldn't be racing. I wouldn't be racing.
Fascinating to hear you say that, Frankie, because from the outside, I think, you know, you had a mid-season transfer last year from Loughborough Lightning to what was then Das Hansling, what is now Das Hutchinson Brother UK. And I think as an observer, you think, well, you know, that makes a lot of sense from a sporting perspective. It's a UCI continental team. Frankie will get more opportunities on the sporting side. It's interesting to hear you say that also simply in terms of keeping you in the sport, racing for a UCI continental team with a, you know, blue chip Bakelite brother, that's actually allowing you to race rather than give up and do something else.
Yeah, like Loughborough are great. They support all domestic, national A, and a couple of UCI. I think they have one UCI trip, the UCI trip this year, and they support all national A racing with transport, accommodation, and race entry. But it's ultimately you're still buying your own bikes, you're still everything, and I didn't see much progression. If I wanted to keep in the sport, I needed to progress and I needed to step up, and it was getting to the stage that, do I commit to my PhD full time and go that way, or do I try and progress in cycling? And it was, yeah, it's kind of given me the opportunity to do that. I wouldn't be doing the higher level races. I wouldn't be doing these kind of like multi-day like stage races. And probably more insightfully, the things that I've learned from being in the team in terms of racing with, like, I'm very fortunate the teammates I have, not only are like, we're, everyone gets on very well, and it's you do grow another kind of like little family. You got a great group of friends and everything like that. But I'm fortunate to race with some very talented and very experienced riders. And the amount I have learned in my almost a year with the team has been beyond measurable. Even in the two, I think the first week of racing I did with the team last year, we went, maybe when we went across to Ireland, I learned more than I'd learned in the last 3 years. So yeah, it brings you on. Riding and racing with better people is, for me, one of the only ways to progress. And it gives you the desire when you keep improving and you keep seeing marked results and improvements, progress where you're at, it makes you want to keep going. I'm very lucky that I absolutely love training. I'd be more than happy to go out and ride my bike all day, every day. My coach will confirm the worst days of my, like any 2-3 week block is the days where I'm not allowed to ride my bike. I hate it. But yeah, I just am very much loving this process.
I mean, one of the sort of harder lessons that you've had to learn this year is recovering from injury. You had a crash at the Antwerp Ports Classic in which I think you dislocated your shoulder. And then the next race, the Tour de Femenin in the Czech Republic, you had to withdraw after a couple of days. Talk us through that process. How dispiriting was that? Or were you able to recover your spirits and recover your form quite quickly?
It was hard. I think the main thing was I had a little peak in end of February for track, and then I had a bit of a kind of a week, 2 weeks off. I actually went out and raced Oettingen in the, like, having not raced since track nationals, and I wasn't in a road form at all. And so I didn't get very many races. I wasn't good enough to be put in the races that the team were doing ultimately. So I'd done a lot of work training and a lot of work to get myself to where I needed to be to get the race selection, which is, it's tough, but it's a positive issue to have. Like, if you're in a team with 19 strong riders, you have to fight for selection. And if you're not good enough, you're not good enough, and you've just got to get better. And so, yeah, I wasn't good enough to be in the races that they were doing. I wasn't getting race selections. So I just had to go away and do some work, focus on what I could bring to the team, what I could do. And I came into Antwerp and I knew my legs were good. I'd done a lot of work. I knew my legs were good. And I'd made all the front splits. I was in the right groups. I'd had a bike change, got back into the front group, and I was riding well. And you kind of get the reassurance of, oh, actually, yeah, I can do this. And that was my first, other than Oettingen, where I just wasn't fit enough. That was the first race, the first UCI race that I'd done. So it was all very new and overwhelming. But I was like, yeah, no, actually, I'm really enjoying this. I feel good. And then, yeah, I crashed, took my shoulder out, whacked my head a bit. And it's kind of like everything that you've worked towards is just gone. And it's, yes, I know that's part of racing, but it's like, oh, I then missed 4 days of work as well, and I couldn't go to work because I put my shoulder out. So you've got that double battle that it's like, oh shit, now I can't race and I can't work. So I then, yeah, went to check because I was like, well, I'm already, the plans are there. The team are running split things. I did the TT. I didn't feel great, but it's a TT, so you can kind of just get around it. I did it on a road bike. I didn't have a TT bike, and I was kind of like mid-pack somewhere, which is not too disrespectful on a road bike. And the second day, started the stage and got knocked very early on in the neutral. And the pain, I just knew that I wasn't going to be able to race how I wanted to race. And I would end up kind of being in poor positions because I was scared about getting hit and getting injured again. And it was only, I think it was like 3 days since I'd done it. And I knew my shoulder was delicate. I didn't have the strength or the stability in it to, I knew that if anything happened, or if I tried to take a bottle, or if I crashed, the damage would be a lot further and
I could have potentially put myself out for the rest of the season. So I just decided after that race, I withdrew my kind of interest in Tour of Britain and just thought I need to take a step away from the racing and just recover, train and come back.
And taking that step away, Frankie, well, in the most literal sense, you took yourself to France, based yourself in Nice, which is a mecca for professional cyclists, all those climbs in the Maritime Alps, and came back in force at the national championships. I mean, we see this all the time now at the pro level. I think Mathieu van der Poel has raced 7 race days this year. He hasn't raced since April, but we'll see him at the Tour de France at the weekend. Is that the way this sport is developing, that you can put in focused training and come back and be competitive in races?
I don't know. I think maybe for someone like van der Poel, who's had so much race experience, for me, I don't know. I still feel very new to it mentally. So it was a big gamble. I get very nervous. When I race a lot, I get more confidence and you get into that flow state of, oh, I've done a race, everything's been okay. I've been confident. I've been able to position. I've been able to be in the bunch and it's been great. And you get kind of confidence and it builds and builds. Whereas I didn't have that. I usually in June go and hammer all the Nat Bs, get some success, and I tend to do quite well. And like I come into form in June, July, and I do well and you get confidence from that. Divs is regionals was one of my favorite races last year. And I obviously it's a local race, but it's I was like, no, I'm just going to go do something different. Where I'm at physically, I knew I needed a bit more of a stimulus and kind of Nat B domestic racing in order to progress physically. So yeah, I've got a bit of a mental block being where I am in the UK at the moment. I'm absolutely petrified of riding on the road here with the cars and the drivers. I've had a couple of issues with crashes and being hit, and you see a lot more of it every day, unfortunately, at the moment. And I've learned a lot about myself, and I know where I need to put myself or where I need to not be in order to be in the best place. And we just gambled, and so far, well, we've had 2 race days. The first race day I got wiped out, so kind of writing that off, and the second one has gone all right. So
I was going to ask about that, Frankie. You crashed in the National Circuit Championships a couple of days before, and you fell on that right shoulder. What was going through your mind?
I won't say the words that were going through my mind at the time.
It's a family show.
Yeah. But I was just not again. I just tried to put it out of my mind as quick as I can. I kind of knew I didn't really hit my head. So I've got a big, feel quite strongly about concussion and riding on, but I knew I didn't hit my head. And so I was like, oh, can I get my chain back on? I couldn't get my chain back on for a long time. And then by the time I got my chain on and got back on my bike, I'd fully knocked my shifters in and kind of rolled around to the pits. And in a race that short, the front group's coming round again. And I had big goals for the Sunday race. And for me, it wasn't worth it to kind of ruin myself for 20 minutes chasing for 20th place. Whereas I'd rather kind of get off, get ice, kind of sort my body out, get on the rollers for a half an hour, cool down and reset, refocus and go again. You can't dwell on it. You sign up for crashes when you enter a race. It is what it is. It happens. It's annoying, but you just got to deal with it and just focus on what's next and prepare yourself the best you can. I think the most frustrating thing is obviously, A, you spent money on racing this race and then you don't get to race it. And B, it takes a lot out of your body when you crash, whether you break a bone or not, your body's battered. I still like the whiplash and neck, you're stiff. And then it uses a lot more. I didn't sleep for the 2 nights between the crit and the road race. And it just uses a lot more energy. You're recovering a lot harder. Then also I got to the start line and was nervous that the last 3 races I've had have not finished. And you kind of, that starts playing on your mind as well. And it's like, although it was all out of my control, you're still, you got these all this form and all these legs, and you can't get, essentially on paper, you can't get round a race. It doesn't matter why you can't get round, but you're next to your name, you've got a DNF. It doesn't say anything else. You just got a DNF. And that's kind of weighing on the back of my mind. And I put a lot of pressure on myself to get a result. I knew I was capable of it. And I put a lot of pressure on myself. I had a lot of kind of self-doubt in my head that maybe I'm not cut out to race a bike.
But yeah, it seemed to come together on the day. I mean, it's just one day, isn't it? I've got a lot more races to kind of work on.
Absolutely. And what a day. I mean, that decision to abandon a crit race to focus on the road race 2 days later, that actually gives us a nice window to discuss the type of rider that Frankie Hall is. And I have to admit, I'm as guilty as the next person in thinking you were a bit of a crit specialist. I remember, you know, tuning into the Tour Series and watching you off the front with Sammy Stewart at Guildford. And then Guildsborough. And then last year's National Crit Race, you were on and off the front constantly. You were, you know, coming back to your very honest characterization of being a Labrador or a Spaniel or something like that. I mean, that was absolutely archetypal performance. And yet, you are not a crit specialist. You proved that with some emphasis on the Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's just because that's the most racing I've done. Yeah, I think that is it. It was also the racing that as an individual rider, you can still do okay. And last year I was racing as an individual at the front of these races against complete teams. In the road races, it was really a really difficult thing to be doing as an individual rider. You get schooled out. It's one versus six or seven riders. And it was, yeah, it was where I could, if they were hard, they were fast races. It was kind of more attritional than tactical and technical at points. And yeah, it was just the most race opportunity that I had. I think that's all it boils down to, is it's just the most common type of racing that I'd done. I'd definitely say I had more successes on the road, kind of at Nat B level when they weren't team races. Kind of a lot of the team races that we've done, I've been riding as playing a team role, which I really enjoy as well. I really like it. Never really backed myself or come into a race being like, oh, this is my race, I want to kind of get a result. Being fair to myself, Sunday was probably the first time I've ever done that and said, you know what, I'm coming in here because I want a result for myself, as opposed to what can I do to get a result for the team being my first thought, or how can I help X, Y, or Z within the team to get a result. So yeah, I the road is where I want to be. Maybe, I don't know, in another world, if finances, teams, I don't know how it would work out, I'd love to go and hammer some of the American pro crits. I'd love to try them, race them, but ultimately you're not going to get a world tour contract racing a load of crits.
Very true. Another discipline in which you've been very successful is on the track. You took two medals, I think, at the recent British National Championships, but where does that fit into the jigsaw of your rider type?
Again, I don't know. I spend very little time on the track. I can't afford to ride it. It's stupidly expensive. So I did two track sessions before nationals, and I really enjoy it. Again, it's an individual kind of race. It's a show of your strength. The IP was a massive shock to me. I did one IP session the Tuesday before nationals. I rode my bike and set up for the first time that Tuesday and the second time in the race. My bunch position I rode for the first time in the qualifiers and then completely changed it, put a new front end and completely new setup on for the final. And again, that points race, I felt mega. I made a silly mistake halfway round and potentially cost myself a jersey. But again, it's just that experience of making those decisions at that point in the race. You do it once, you make a mistake, you learn, you know you're not going to do that again. But yeah, I really enjoy track. If there was scope, if I had the opportunity, I'd ride it a lot more, but I just can't afford it. It's just, you can't, I don't know. It's just not an option that I can really pursue. I'd love to, but yeah.
Well, for somebody who can win a silver medal in the individual pursuit and a bronze in the points race at a national championship, that is sad to hear. More positively, you're going great guns on the road. You won the Harrogate Nova race earlier in the year. You were top 10 at Lincoln and now top 10 at the Road Nationals. What are your ambitions, Frankie, for the rest of the year? We're sort of at peak season now, aren't we?
Yeah, I still feel like I'm literally at the start of my road season.
So I feel like for me, it does feel very much like the start of my main race block. Otley and Ilkley this week are kind of, I'm using as training to get through. And then Portugal is a big focus for me. It's got some hillier stages, which is where my strengths lie. And we've not done any races that are actual hilly races, essentially. There's been punchy climbs and none of the British races are really kind of, the longest climb you're going to get is 4 or 5 minutes. So yeah, hopefully get a bit of an opportunity there. And then we'll see. We don't know. With the team that we've got so many strong riders. We don't know our race calendar. I don't know what I'm doing. It's kind of, you know, it's quite an anxiety-inducing experience that you can say, I want to do this race, but ultimately they're going to take the strongest team. And if you're not good enough, you're not making it. So yeah, Portugal will be my next focus. And then see how I go there and see what other races come up.
Well, I mean, given everything that you've achieved already this year, injury setbacks and coming back in fine style, who would bet against more impressive performances to come? Frankie, thank you very much indeed for joining us today and very best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.